Item number 13, Org Unit 1950, Employee Fringe Benefits, Non-Departmental, page 388.
Mr. Chair. Supervisor Lipscomb.
Before we get into all the changes, just sort of to bridge between the last item and this item. So we saw where the revenues disappear, and then there was reference to the fact that the savings show up in 1950. What are we saying those are? Are they exceeding what we've lost in revenue, or how has this change been experienced?
Mr. Chairman and supervisors, yes, there is a benefit to the county. The average revenue under Medicare Part D, I believe, was about $3.6 to $3.8 million annually. Based on the work with the actuary and the reimbursements that we'll be receiving through the EGWIT program, it's about $4.2 million. So there's an improvement of about $600,000 from entering into this program. And Mr. Hanchek can explain in greater detail that. I was going to provide sort of a high-level overview of the fringe benefit budget, if you'd like. And then certainly Mr. Hanchek can delve into more significant details.
Go ahead.
If you'd like. First, just to start on figures, page 390, you'll see a breakdown of the comparison of net health and dental costs between retiree and active. 59% of the budgeted costs for health and dental are for retirees, and 41% are for active. The composition of the health insurance prescribers. 47% are post-65 retiree, 36% are active, and 17% are pre-65 retiree. To go into the health insurance, basically we have one line item, which is about $108 million, which includes all medical claims, net of copays and deductibles, prescription drug claims, net of the commercial rebates, and the employee group waiver program that we discussed. Payments to our third-party administrator, our stop-loss insurance premiums, prescription drug administration, new fees implemented by the Affordable Care Act, about $750,000, and then the reinsurance fee, which I believe is at about $50,000, and then flu shots during the open enrollment period. The estimate was based on basically an increase over the 2013 base. The actuary provided us an estimate of about $65 million. The comptroller provided us an estimate for 13 of about $68 million. Working with the Office of the Comptroller, we chose a base sort of in the middle of that and added on about a 7% increase, which works out to about a 7.6% increase over the 2013 budget. So that sort of gets into the sort of the cost to continue, if you will. There is $4.2 million budgeted, as I mentioned, for rebates or revenues from the EGWIT program, and then $3.5 million in rebates from prescription drugs. The change to the prescription drugs is a reduction in revenue of about $1.1 million, and that's based on several factors that I'll let Matt go into. Part-time health benefits, that was an item that was proposed last year, and there's some language that you'll see on that at the bottom of page 390. There is no provision for that included in the recommended budget for 2014. As far as dental and other health care expenditures and revenues, originally, the recommendation was to get rid of the DMO plan because of the significant increase that they had required. And so the goal was to provide the PPO plan and provide some enhanced benefits to that. Basically, from what we discovered over the summer was that that benefit was somewhat out of date. So we wanted to enhance that benefit while also bringing the premiums more in line with the city of Milwaukee and some of the other market-based comparisons. We had in the recommended budget, there's about $4.1 million of expenditures and $1.1 million of revenue. Those figures were put together assuming that we would actually implement. I shouldn't say it assumed. It granted the possibility that the DMO plan would be implemented had they come down to a reasonable increase. But then it would have provided the much higher premiums that you see in the paragraph under the chart. Since then, as we've talked about the errors in the budget, Mr. Hanchek has reached an agreement with the DMO that could be implemented as part of the budget, which would provide the same premiums for employees, a reduced benefit from what it currently is now, however, a better benefit compared to just the PPO plan item, and we can go into further detail on that. The Wellness and Disease Management Program, the 2013 budget included $950,000 to implement an employee wellness program. Human Resources issued the RFP for that and came back at a cost of about $350,000 to $400,000, which is included in the budget. And then using some conservative assumptions on enrollment in that plan, provided a $50 penalty, if you will, on premiums for individuals who do not enroll in that plan, so that basically that wellness program largely pays for itself. The flex spending account contribution, as has been discussed, would be eliminated in the recommended budget. That is an expenditure reduction of about $3.7 million. Medicare Part B reimbursement continues generally at the same level it has been, with a slight increase. The budget continues the opt-out program for health insurance with the same process. The employee and retiree health care contributions, the premiums increase, as was pointed out in Mr. Cady's analysis, for all levels to bring them in line with the benchmarks as provided by Willis. The language on the Patient Protection and Affordable Care Act, over the summer we did engage in preliminary analysis of the possibility of implementing or going to the exchanges. Based on some conservative estimates of what those premiums might look like at the time, it was possible that the county could save up to $10 million by switching to the exchanges, and we can certainly go into detail on that as you have other questions. On the pension side, this has pretty much been provided by our actuary. The only significant changes is that the normal cost increases by about $1.7 million, while the amortization of the unfunded actuarial liability declines by about $3.2 million. And the DOIN pension contribution increases by about $511,000. There is a provision, as noted in the analysis, that we would work with Human Resources, Corporation Counsel, and the Comptroller to investigate the possibility of moving towards an opt-out system for the pension system, and so that employees may have the opportunity to move to a defined contribution or 401k style program. The only other significant items would be the wage and benefit increase. The budget does provide a 2% across the board cost of living adjustment effective the 10th pay period of 2014. Works out to about a 1.31% lift. The State Department of Revenue has provided a forecast of 1.66% for 2014. We have received two opinions contradicting one another that that lift, as far as negotiating with bargaining units, would the 2%, just as a 2% raise, be above that 1.66%? And then is the 1.66% the maximum allowable raise? On the other hand, we have an outside legal opinion that says it's the value of the lift, not the nominal percentage in salary, that is that's subject to the cap provided by the Department of Revenue. The budget assumes that all employees will receive the 2% increase. However, if it's determined that 1.66 is the maximum, then that'll obviously be the cap for negotiating purposes. And step increases are eliminated in 2014. The Department of Human Resources has been going through a very significant analysis of our pay grades, and I'll let Carrie go into more detail about that. that concludes the high-level announcements.
Mr. Chairman, I think Mr. Fudge covered all of the general remarks that I had in mind. I would just invite any questions, and I will answer them to the best of my ability.
Director Mitchell.
Thank you, Chairman and Supervisors. I'm also here to answer any questions at this time.
With respect to what Mr. Fudge just alluded to as far as the compensation study or compensation plan, when is that to be brought to this committee?
Thank you, Chairman and Supervisors. And actually, Katrina, if you'd like to join us as well. I'm inviting Ms. Evans forward, our compensation director, as well. This project has been going forward throughout the entire year. Quarter by quarter, we've gone department by department and done a pretty in-depth analysis of things like, you know, job titles and job grades and those sorts of things. So as some of those changes have needed to happen, we've put those through the reallocation and reclassification process. So they've been coming bit by bit.
Well, Director, I just want to have some sense as to when, because even though that was mentioned, there would be some thinking as far as committee members are concerned as we are looking toward the budget. When are some of these salary changes or compensation changes to occur? I just want to know when this will be in front of us so we can go back to what's been in front of us.
To Chairman Johnson, Katrina Evans, Director of Compensation. With regards to the overall job analysis and evaluation project, which is really the focus, we are in phase four. We actually conducted the process instructional training for that senior leadership group back on September 26th. So we are expected to wrap up everything by year end.
Year end?
Correct. Okay.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
Director Mitchell, do you have anything else to add?
I do not at this time. Thanks.
Okay. Any questions, committee members? Supervisor Lipscomb? Supervisor Coleman? Unemployment and fringe benefits, 1950.
There's a lot of stuff in here. How does the idea that we're talking about compensation studies, but then at the same time in a single budget document we're gonna adjust people's compensation when factoring in benefits costs, we're going to adjust some people down more than 7%. I mean, the execs are always talking about best practice and all that. Who are we following here when we're going to adjust sort of the average employee down, the employee with a family, their compensation decreasing more than 7% when factoring in all the changes to health insurance premiums? Elimination of flex bend, I think what I just heard, which is that the 2% really isn't the 2%, it's really the 1.66. So we're gonna make pronouncements about how we're giving people raises, but then we're really gonna give them net cuts of 7% or more. What best practice is this, and how does this factor into the fact that, I mean, you can go and look at compensation, but then when you net out all these changes in benefits, you're actually giving across the board pay cuts.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisors, I'll start on the life and health benefits and kind of work my way back from there. The benchmarks that we look at for most anything related to life and health are going to come out of an annual study. This year it was the Mercer 2012 study. And what that looks at is a number of different segments of the overall data, all employers, similar sized employers, similar geography. It does have an element for public sector as well, but it's not specifically our local public entities as well for a comparison. We use that to see how our level of benefits compared to what others are doing in those different segments of the data. The one caveat I have to add to that is regarding the FSA. There is no benchmark for the FSA because, frankly, other employers don't do that. The closest thing that I've seen to that benefit has been a credit on child care FSA, and it's usually a percentage of the overall amount that employees can put in. We're very much an outlier on that particular benefit. With regards to how that ties into overall comp, that would be a different set of benchmark data, and I'd have to defer to Katrina to describe those.
I'm sorry, just before we go on the FSA comparison, when you say we're an outlier, you mean within the public sector?
No.
I mean, you're saying no one gives an FSA benefit? Then what?
Supervisor Chairman, what I'm saying is that it's very common for employers to offer flexible spending accounts to employees. What's extremely uncommon is to fund that FSA account with employer money. I'm not aware of any other major employer that does what we're doing with that plan. I've okay. never been able to find one. I don't have a comparison for it.
Okay. And was it not the exec that first instituted the FSA? Was it not in an executive proposal that first created that FSA contribution a couple years ago before he went to remove it?
Chairman, supervisors, no, it wasn't originally from the executive's office. I was approached in the process of building the annual budget, I believe from the board side, looking for a method to try to balance the disparity between the non-reps who pay for their premiums and the retirees who don't. And part of that was I was asked to examine HRA, HSA, and FSA models and ultimately recommended FSA as the vehicle to accomplish that goal, but it wasn't necessarily an executive directive
okay.
to do it. It was just me supporting the efforts of the board in working through their budget.
Mr. Chairman, Supervisor, that's correct. Mr. Hancheck is correct that we had asked about that because when you look and you say there is no real comparisons and benchmarks in the FSA, well, there's very few comparisons to the type of benefits we're offering. With almost 20,000 covered lives, over half clearly going to retirees where we're kind of locked into the benefits, it kind of calls out for a different approach. And one of the nice things just quickly is in this budget narrative, is that I think they've done is they've broken out the cost between your actives and your retirees. Before, they were all lumped into one line. Mm-hmm. And as you look at that, you can see that your retiree health care costs are going up 7.1%. Your actives are going up 2.3%. But all of those costs, all of those increases, are being borne by the actives. And that's just something that as you continue to look at this 1950 budget, I just wanted to point that out. So, yes, the FSA was designed for the unique circumstances of the fact that we cannot get monthly premium participation from our retirees.
Okay, thank you. On the FSA, thank you for that, Mr. Chairman. But I'd still like to hear some explanation of this overall justification of why strategy of cutting workers. I'm assuming you all have seen the county board analysis and understand that what I'm citing in terms of the net cut across the board to employees, that there is no, for all the pronouncements about the pay raise, the net effect of the budget is a pay cut for everyone.
Chairman, supervisors, I wouldn't argue that point. It's certainly going to have a financial impact on employees. I can tell you that the healthcare changes in terms of the premiums that are there are within the benchmark, including the benchmark for government sectors. But that still doesn't change the fact that it will impact employees fairly significantly.
I'm sorry. So you said the benchmark, you're talking about in the Mercer study mm-hmm. where public employees but no local examples were included. But so in those cases, are we comparing compensation equally then, or we're just comparing premiums?
The study that I used for working through healthcare doesn't tie back to total compensation study. I think that's part of the overall effort that Ms. Evans is working on. It's one factor within that. Is there a better way to explain that?
Yeah, let's step back a little bit, Supervisor Lipscomb. First of all, overall, we don't have a formal total compensation, report or strategy at this time. actually one thing from the benefits aspect or the health and welfare and retirement, that's the benchmark as it relates solely to that area. For compensation, benchmarks totally, first of all, the job analysis evaluation project is not a total compensation study. It's focusing on building that foundation for us to scope out our jobs based on the roles and responsibilities that they're doing based on a strategic plan for the department for the next 1 to 3 years. And first we have to determine that before we set base comp to it. And when we look at this, the point of base comp, we're actually looking at it from a government service sector perspective, not private, because we have to ensure cost effectiveness, and we cannot compete right now based on where we are financially to align ourselves to the private sector. So I think, you know, what I understand what you've read, and I read that, and I'm a little concerned as well. I think overall, yes, there will be a net impact based on the changes that are proposed for the health and welfare retirement side due to the fact of our current position as it relates to base compensation.
I didn't understand that. I understand there's 4,600 different total compensation analysis you could do. Every employee can do this chart for themselves.
Right.
The elected officials actually have a higher one because there's no adjustments, so no upward adjustments. But it seems that the net effect for all employees at all levels, and more disproportionate if you have a family, disproportionate if you're at the lower rungs of the pay scale. But the net effect is a compensation decrease. So who are we following here? We're not following our public sector peers, because you can already, particularly locally, you can already see that we're way out of comparison with the city of Milwaukee and the state of Wisconsin, the two most likely comparable public employers. That it's where we get a lot of our employees. It's where a lot of our employees go. So what's driving that? I don't understand what's driving this, other than it's been an effective strategy for the governor and for this exec to put it on the backs of public employees. Is there something I'm missing here, or is that it? Is that what this is about?
Mr. Hanchek?
Chairman, supervisors, with regards to health care, we've been the leader in this. If you look at the moves made subsequently by the city of Milwaukee, they've generally been following us. We've been out ahead of this for a variety of reasons, not the least of which is the fiscal pressures that have been on this government and forcing our hand to make some of these decisions sooner. In terms of benchmarking, certainly that could be a policy decision on which benchmark is the appropriate one to look at. The one that I've been asked to look at in this has been both similar-sized employers in this region and the government sector benchmark that I had available, but it doesn't necessarily tie out to local at all. And frankly, we're significantly different from them. We've been out ahead of the city and the state in terms of the changes that we've made to our plans to make them more sustainable.
Okay. If there's any other supporting stuff that you're able to provide us, I wouldn't mind seeing those comparisons. But, I mean, all I can conclude is that Abley is trying to out-Walker. I mean, when you look at the comparison of our plan to the state plan, even Walker isn't trying to do to state employees what Abley is now doing in his third, we're on our third budget here. It's unbelievable what has happened from 11 to the proposed 14.
And what's significant is for the last two years, the increase in premiums has been roughly 28%, and we were able to put them down to about 25% the last 2 years. And this year it calls for another increase as far as premiums and copays, I should say, and other costs associated. So this government may have led the way, but it's the scope and the extent to which it has led the way as relates to getting employees to make personal and family contributions to the health care. And that might be what's daunting, particularly since I didn't know this, but you indicated that someone from the county board did ask you to look at flexible spending accounts and other vehicles that could be used for employees. And you did say that in this particular case, even though in private sector, or there have been times during which flexible spending accounts have been offered, that we have a very unique situation here. But again, I'm looking at the upper end to which we've had to come down in our eyes to help employees to just make things palatable, given the budget, given a zero increase tax levy budget. So we've tried to do what we can, and we'll look at this and go forward. I saw somebody, Supervisor Haas, his Supervisor Cullen.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, one concern I have with all these the increases in the cost of benefits being pushed onto the employees, plus the proposed elimination of the FSA. Whoa. I think, yeah, we're leading the way here, but we're going to be leading the way to losing your employees. Okay? Yeah. That's not good. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Supervisor Cullen.
Yeah, I just have a question. Turn this on. When you talked about there would be no step increases next year, what has been the policy generally for step increases?
Mm-hmm. Chairman Cullen, to the rest of supervisors, the way the policy is derived today and in the past, it's really based upon a number of set hours. Generally, it's based on truly getting a step increase is based on normally 2,080 hours. However, depending on what represented, how you're represented determines if you have additional hours tacked on to that. So there is no uniformity when amongst all of our employees as the timing in which a person is eligible for an increment. In other words, a step increase. Due to the freezes, that kind of impacted a lot. So based on the policy, you have to meet a number of hours in order to get a step increase, to answer your question.
Okay, follow up?
Yes, sir, please.
Then do you anticipate that those employees who were getting step increases would not get an increase in 2014?
The plan for that is to come to a common increase cycle, so everyone could receive an increase at the same time to ensure that no one gets caught up within a cycle of a freeze to create inequities for one person getting it in 1 year, another one not able to get it for maybe several years. This is to allow for us to be able to have a common increase cycle so when everyone is treated equally.
It seems to me that there's been a fair amount recently of changes in, you know, promotions to a higher level within the steps. I'm not speaking correctly of the terminology. And I wonder, is there any way, I'm finding it difficult in this budget book to get a lot of good information. You find that hard to believe, a 400-some page document that you can't find information, but for some reason, I'm finding it difficult. Is there some way to get information regarding how many employees, say, in 2013, were moved to a higher step on their pay?
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would like that, and I don't want any names associated with it, anything like that, but if I could have then... some sort of breakdown as to how much a person would have then gained or lost.
Sure.
I'm presuming most of them gained. I mean, I haven't seen a lot of reports coming to the board showing people moving down steps.
Sure.
So it appears to me that there may be some things in these, you know, in the budget where some people are getting moved up And then now we're going to say, well, there's no step increases, but they've already been moved up in 2013 mm-hmm. to accommodate things. So if I could get a – maybe I'll try to put something in writing to you that's a little more clear. But what I'd like to see is a report that says how many employees in 2013 moved from one step to another, what those positions were and what the change in pay was and what the effect on the budget was going forward. So – if that's possible. Is that something possible to get?
Yes, it
okay.
is.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Supervisor Stamper.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Okay. When it's budget season, different departments present their budgets to the county executive for analysis, correct? Was this expert strategy developed by your department and then presented to the county executive?
As far as the supervisor staffer,
the employee fringe benefit outcome.
Supervisors, mm-hmm. the Org 1950 budget was developed collaborating directly with the exec's budget staff. They had my input throughout on it,
okay,
but I wouldn't say that I developed it and presented it to them.
Oh, so it's
something
together.
That I worked on with them the
okay.
whole way through.
Okay, and then there's a question, pretty good question posed in this in 1950 on this review. The question is, please help us understand why active employees are asked to cover the cost increases for not only active employees and dependents, but for the retirees as well. I don't know if you discussed that earlier in your explanation, but if you did, I missed it.
Sure.
Would you please explain that?
Chairman, Supervisors, I don't know that it was necessarily a deliberate effort to only apply this to active employees. The fact of the matter is that plan design relative to our benchmarks, we're already there in terms of our co-pays, our co-insurance, our deductibles are above benchmark, consistent with the strategy that I've recommended of being below benchmark on premium and above on deductibles directly because of the retirees. We did discuss at length the possibility of increasing the deductible as an option to spread the cost increases more evenly across actives and retirees. But the fact of the matter is that due to Medicare coordination and just the diminishing returns from raising deductibles after a certain point, it's still going to impact much more strongly the actives than it will the retirees.
Okay.
We really are hemmed in on that obligation to provide the same health care plan to the retirees as actives.
Okay. And I don't remember, was that proposed last year? I don't remember this from last year. I remember the shift to the active employees, but I don't remember the overall shift, but I don't remember a specific shift from retirees versus active employees.
Supervisor, I'd have to look at last year's recommended budget. The recommendation was very different than where we ended up, so I'd really have to take a minute to refresh my memory about it and get back to you.
Well, just is it a common practice?
To
do that?
Generally speaking, no. Our advice has been to the extent possible to try to spread it evenly, and that's part of why a couple of years ago we saw a significant increase to the deductibles and then a parallel benefit being offered with the FSA. Part of that was to mitigate the disparity between actives and retirees. The problem that we have is that we've pushed that about as far as we realistically can. At this point, we don't see a lot of returns from adding additional deductible room, and most of the people that are going to feel the impact of that are actives because it takes a Medicare-eligible retiree that much longer to reach their deductible because of the presence of Medicare and making the primary payment. We kind of dried up that well is the best way to describe it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Supervisor Bowen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just have a question about the insurance plan that we now have, that I would say, you know, kind of looks really, really bad for our employees that, work really hard for the county. I think you made a comment about with the, fiscal condition of the county and making decisions in association with where we are, and I think a lot of times that has to do with where we are spending the money that we do have and, shifting that in the appropriate way. The question I had was kind of in line with Supervisor Stamper and Supervisor Steele Lipscomb, but I can't find my question anymore. So I got lost in what I was about to ask.
Well, Supervisor,
if somebody
to,
else, I'll
go to Supervisor Schmidt and then,
and then I come back.
Well,
right.
I don't want to put words in your mouth, Supervisor, but I think we're all in the same situation here. I mean, it's been 3 years now, and I think a lot of us went on record last year saying we don't want to see basically the budget balanced on the backs of the employees. And, you know, and how much is enough? Is 15, 20%, 25%, 26%, 28% now of the cost? It was a sustainability issue, I guess, and the administration's viewpoint it still is. I mean, it is a sustainability issue, of course, but when we see these deficits we talked about in right in the beginning of the budget process here, we saw that those, you know, we talked about $77 million, now we're down to $15 million. And a big portion of that is obviously because the employees have picked up the responsibilities, pensions, which we didn't pay until a few years ago, substantially more in our health programs, higher deductibles, and one reason we went to a single system is so the obviously so the retirees had to pay some co-pays and deductibles because they're not paying premiums for the most part. So we're at the crossroads again, so we're going to have to make a difficult decision here. And last year we put flexible spending back in because we felt that it was one way to try to balance the cuts that were given to employees. So you know, we're never getting ahead as elected officials, of course. I mean, you know, we're paying 20% now. We paid 10% before, and we'll never get a raise. So, but there for a lot of people out there, and this is the problem in the step increases that the Supervisor Cullen talked about, which we need to look at, because this is a way around it. You get selected people to get step increases, and in many do not. There have been freezes in the past. So it's how do we be equitable? That's always the question. So, and the people at the lower scale, I mean, they pay the same, you know, premiums that people who make $50,000 or $70,000. So I know we always brought up the problem of some kind of graduated system, but I guess that's so difficult to try to figure out that that's not even part of the planning again. But, again, I think we really have to do the heavy lifting here and decide, well, is this a reasonable increase? Are you know, sustainability is important to all of us, but, you know, then we have to make the hard decision. Well, we have to cut some other departments then, or do we just keep this progression going on asking the employees to just pay more and more? When is their fair share met? Have we met their fair share already or not? And I mean, that's the question I'm asking. I think it's a question we're all going to have to answer. And I don't know if that was part of your thinking.
Supervisor Bowen. Sorry.
Thank you. And I found it back. The question was, is this plan made with the same provider that we have, United Healthcare?
Chairman, supervisors, yes, it is.
Okay. Is that because we have a contract with United for a certain amount of years, or why not RFP this and see if we can get a better rate?
Chairman, supervisors, we don't literally pay a rate to our plan. We're self-funded. So what we pay is an administrative fee to United Healthcare, and ultimately the costs are paid by Milwaukee County. So it's not as simple as doing an RFP or trying to seek a different insurance quote. We haven't been insured for quite some time, and that's netted us very significant savings by doing it this way. Mm-hmm. Ultimately, when you look at what carrier we're working with, you're looking at which carrier is leveraging the best price concessions from the hospitals and doctors in this community. And that's been consistently United Healthcare for several years and continues to do so. We will be evaluating it again following 2014, but our current contract runs through the end of 14.
Okay. And lastly, I just wanted to mention that if there's any way that the Affordable Care Act market exchanges actually do work, that sounds like the best idea that has come this way of the Mississippi, because this is way too high. I mean, the cost of health care is way too high. And continuing to make these decisions, you know, it's just tough. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Supervisor Jurczyk, and then we have three. I have three cards from persons who would like to speak.
I'll be brief. I mean, let's not pretend this is a vacuum. Private sector is dealing with the same thing, and more employers are talking about completely eliminating health care. So it's not like we're alone in this. Yes, we have to take care of our employees, but this is reality. This is reality inside and outside of the government. So, I mean, it's a lot of folks that are looking at the benefits county employees, as much as we reduce them, and I understand all that, but the private sector has taken as large a hit, if not more, at times. So, you know, we need to realize that. We're not in a vacuum. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other supervisor? Supervisor Lipscomb?
I don't know if we're. I'm assuming we're going to take this up another day because there's a lot of stuff in here.
This is informational. This is discussion. We're listening to presentations, but amendments and. Yeah.
All right.
These items item in particular is going to be rescheduled.
I guess for my purposes and to save some time, if there's information beyond what's provided about some of the things in there that are. They're just touched on, like the 401k plan, and you know, you made a comment about the $500, you know, that we're not changing anything about the, you know, the $500 incentive to for people to take other health care. I mean, some of those things haven't really been, they're not detailed in here, but some of those have been. Let me separate them up. 401k plan. We've been over this thing a couple times. Mm-hmm. So what's new? Why is it being repurposed in this budget with no detail? Have you learned something new that makes it more viable now than it was the last couple times we've had this item before us outside of the budget? On the other one, I guess I would like some analysis on the incentive. Have we not looked at that in a while? Or if you have, what's been the result? Because as our plan moves closer to the private sector model, which is kind of what we're seeing, there may very well be a reason why we can incentivize someone to take their spouse's coverage and get off of our dime. And so what is the appropriate incentive level to do that? So I think there's more supporting information that I could use before the next time. So I'd appreciate that.
Thank you. Mr. Hanchick, the wellness plan, does it include spouses?
Chairman, supervisors, the yes, it includes spouses from the standpoint that they're able to participate. No, it doesn't in terms of enforcing the penalty, at least not initially. So my spouse would be eligible to go through the screenings, work with a health coach if she chose to, but if she chose not to, we wouldn't necessarily incur the $50 penalty. That would be contingent on me participating.
Yeah.
Is that something that we could adjust after we get going with this? Absolutely. Excuse me. You know, we can definitely revisit that, but I think initially we want to keep this as simple to process and execute as we can.
And
you know, it's just a recommendation.
Okay, thank you. And I will ask with respect to the county exec, at least from what I read in the newspaper or on JS online about Milwaukee County government going to exchanges, is there a plan to be forthcoming, or is the idea that David Reamer presented that maybe a year from now that we will have some experience and know actually how all the plans work?
Chairman, supervisors, I've been asked to work with Mr. Reamer on developing a plan and bringing it back. As far as the details of it yet, it's still a little premature. I haven't sat down with him yet. I haven't worked out any of that.
Okay, thank you very much. Supervisor Stamper, and then we go to the three persons who'd like to speak.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In reference to Supervisor Cullen's request, can you clarify that request again? Because I'm interested in, I don't know if it's part of that or
and
the same thing.
Could that product be given to every committee member? So let us know.
What was our request? Regarding step
request regarding yeah. regarding the list of the information related to positions.
What was
step
the
increases for 2013?
What was the request?
He wanted information on step increases for positions for 2013. He wanted information.
Does that mean the reclassifications as well?
No. For what has happened in 2013 up to now, he wants information related to where people were, how much the compensation was, which the
well, I think reclassifications is a good addition because I think there's been some of that going on too. You know, so if a particular individual has been reclassified,
yep.
We don't need to know the name of that individual, but it'd be nice to know if, you know, Mr. Jones got reclassified from position A to position C, and because of that got a $10,000 raise.
So
that wouldn't necessarily be a step increase. So I think that's a good suggestion to get that.
I think that's where it derived from, all those reclassifications.
Yeah. The positions as opposed to knowing about Mr. Jones himself.
Right. So is that something you can add? The reclassifications piece?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. David Eisner, if you would come forward to testify. Thank you very much.
Good afternoon. Dave Eisner, Contract Administrator with District Council 48. And Jeff Weber also signed up a card. He's with me here to speak on this item. I had a document distributed to you which asked me put together, which in effect basically is a comparable of, and I just pulled one component, which was the employee premiums. It shows the city and the state for both 2013 and 2014. I just kind of like to, you know, go through, you know, the documents in a quick summary. So what struck us was that, you know, the county executive in his, you know, fringe benefit explanation here, he talks about the dental plan, and he felt it necessary to make a comparison to the city in as far as, you know, the justification for raising the dental plan. And that's fine, but if you turn to page 2, I'm sure in the same document that he used to do this, it also lists health care costs as far as the employee premium rate for the city of Milwaukee. So we find it interesting that he omits that when he puts his health care premiums out for 2013 and 2014 when that information is readily available. And it's, of course, because the comparison is not in his favor. As you can see in the fourth column over, the UHC choice plan, it's the city's version of an HMO. The employee monthly rate is $54.42 for 2013, whereas you see on page 3, the employee for the county paid $100. And every single comparison in all those plans, the county is much more than the city. If you skip over to page 4 then, which is the state health care plan rate premiums for 2013, they have a tiered system. They do a little differently. And I just read this paragraph. For active employees, it says, the group insurance board and its consulting actuaries rank and assign each of the available health plans to one of three tier categories based on its efficiency and quality of care. Your premium contribution is determined by the tier ranking of your health plan. So again, if you look at tier one, which I understand the majority of state employees take, it's $85 for a single plan, and they just have one family rate, not a child or a spouse. It's just one family rate, $211. And again, you know, much cheaper than the county charge last year. So skipping over to the next document, these are the proposed employee premium shares for the 2014 budget. Again, even subtracting the $50 for participation in a wellness plan, if you skip to the next document, which is, again, the 2014 rates for active employees for their version of the HMO that they have, it goes up a little bit to $74.62. Again, though, if you look at the, and this is minus the wellness, you know, piece, it's still $115 a month for a county employee. Now, the city realized something that, you know, we've been, you know, complaining about to the county for a couple years. They're trying to do steerage to get employees to go to the cheaper plan for them, which is the HMO, the EPO in this case. So the premiums for 2014 have drastically increased on the PPO side. Again, that's my understanding is that's all about steerage, trying to get people to go into the EPO plan. Again, that's what we used to have in 2011 when we had an HMO, and the county claims that's not the case. I don't understand that. Again, the state, same premise as before. For 2014, their proposed single rate is $88 a month, and for a family rate, $219. Going to the next page, I just want to point out that Milwaukee County from 2012 had a $24.6 million surplus. That's, again, I couldn't find a document online from the county that said that, but it does quote the comptroller, Scott Mansky, in indicating that $8 million of that surplus was from employee health care costs. So, again, to say that, $8 million last year the county saved on the backs of the employees of Milwaukee County. The final document I have here is the county executive's communication to staff regarding thanking them for the hard work they do, talking about his 2014 budget. You're going to get a 2% raise, and that's more that was given to the state workers. What he neglected to mention was the state workers only contribute 12.6% to their health care costs, and based upon what's in the budget plan for 2014, I believe the employees of Milwaukee County will be paying about 28% as a contribution to their health care. So, again, omitting that fact and, you know, telling us that, you know, because of the good work all the employees do, he's recommending that to the county board. Thrilling.
Thank you.
Okay, and then I just had some other final comments.
Go ahead.
Okay. So the in reference to the flexible spending account, the FSA contribution is eliminated in 2014. Now that's a cost to the of $3,691,000 in health savings to the employees. That's going to cost them, along with another $6.6 million in additional health care costs to the employees through the premiums. That results in $6.6 million that is coming out of this budget on the backs of the employees. The elimination of the FSA, it's in the budget summary, I know that came out. $600 was the employees were getting in the FSA, an employee and a child, $1,440, employee and a spouse, $1,200, and employee and a family, $1,800. The employee retirement contribution for general employees is increasing this year from 4.4% to 5.1% of their salary. And after a two-year freeze on step increases, the county executive budget eliminates all step increases in 2014. So after a two-year freeze, now they're just going away. So, you know, not only is the county executive using employees as a revenue source to balance the budget, he's using the employees as a revenue source to fix Milwaukee County's structural deficit. And that action is deplorable, shameful, unacceptable, and cruel, and it flies in the face of previous statements by the county executive who claims to value and appreciate the work and service of county employees, and this should be rejected by this committee and the full county board. And I turn it over to Mr. Weber now. Thank you.
Mr. Eisner. Mr. Weber.
Jeff Weber with the Federation of Nurses and Health Professionals and a Milwaukee County BHD employee. My members and I, we have not had a raise in 2 years. We have not had a step increase in 2 years. HR is now proposing the elimination of the step increases. We've heard all the supervisors, and I thank you, Theo Lipscomb, for your take on that 7% net pay cut. The impact of this lack of raises, lack of step increases, charging 40% to 80% in premiums, we are going to be losing staff at BHD. It's been hard enough to staff that hospital with the announcement by the county executive in February that he was closing two programs in 3 years' time. If all this goes through as is, it is going to be, I feel, very difficult to staff that hospital safely. I urge you to hold off on the implementation of the ACA until 2015, and you get a full and complete analysis and review of the impact of the ACA. Right now it's in the budget. The county executive said that due to the possible impact of retention of staff at Behavioral Health Division, no change is made to the health insurance coverage for employees who work less than full time. A vast majority of the part-time employees, especially at BHD, are women. And the county, as far as I am aware, does not provide for a 0.8 position, which then would allow them to have health care coverage. Again, this is going to have a huge detriment on staffing the hospital. If our part-time employees lose insurance, aren't getting raises, we're not going to be able to staff that hospital. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions of the gentleman? Comments, questions? Thank you very much. Patricia Rogers, please come forward.
Chairman Johnson and supervisors, I'm Patricia Rogers. I'm president of Local 645, which kind of covers the human service workers, social workers, paralegals, a lot of different things. All over the county I have people. Since this is an informational meeting only, I'm not going to get real detailed. I probably will in your future meetings. And I'm not going to be so specific as Mr. Eisner did. More on an emotional level, this budget the county exec has put out seems to be putting the county on a path to, you know, to equalize public service and private sector worker work. Which, you know, you could look good or bad, you know, at that. But where's the incentive for high-quality employees to come to work for government if it's equalized? There's no incentive when you're everyone is, and you get what you pay for then. You get what you pay. Be careful what you wish for, because if everything's equal, you get everybody. I'm a juvenile probation officer. We do the work that other people don't want to do, not just juvenile probation officers, but the highway workers, the psychiatric social workers at BHD. The correction officers at the House of Correction, the people who work in disability services, we do the work that other people don't want to. We go into the homes, a lot of us go into homes. We go into neighborhoods that I'd like to take county executive with me on some of my home visits and see the things I see and hear the public's histories and their lives, the lives they live. This is what we do as public workers. We work for the community. And all this, you know, oh, you know, my tax money is paying you. And, well, I pay taxes too, so I'm paying myself, you know, if that's the way you want to look at it. Like I said, it was going to be a little emotional. That's about it. But I did want to add that I, as Brother Eisner mentioned, I still believe we need the choice of the HMO and the PPO. This is just hitting us. We're taking a pay cut. That's the bottom line. We're taking a pay cut for the jobs that we do that no one else wants to do. Thank you.
Thank you. Any supervisors would like to explore or offer before we adjourn? This meeting is now adjourned. Thank you. Thank you all.